from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, gas prices rose in California an average of 18.8 cents throughout the state this past week, which means many of you are paying over $4 a gallon at the pump. Why the steep rise in cost, and why especially in California? We'll discuss the price of gas and how it affects consumers, and what, if anything, can be done about it. That's next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Global oil prices are at a nine-month high of $15 a barrel, and California is now the third highest state in the nation behind Hawaii and Alaska for the average price of regular and unleaded gasoline. According to the AAA, pump prices have jumped in every metro area across Northern California and have spiked across the state over 15 cents since mid-January. Gas is all too typically now above $4 a gallon, and in this hour of Forum, we want to focus our attention on the causes behind the rising price of gasoline, as well as the effects and perhaps what can be done about it. Jay McKeeman is with us. He's with us from Sacramento this morning, Vice President of Government Relations with the California Independent Oil Marketers Association. They represent gas station owners throughout the state, and welcome, Jay McKeeman.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Michael Levy, who is with us this morning from the nation's capital in Washington. He is Senior Fellow for Energy and the Environment with the Council on Foreign Relations. And welcome to the program, Michael Levy.
Good to be with you, Michael.
Good to have you. We also have Catherine Rehise-Boyd with us this morning, who is President of the Western States Petroleum Association. She's with us from the state capital in Sacramento. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. And Judy Dugan is also joining us this morning, Research Director for Consumer Watchdog, and she's with us from Santa Monica. And welcome, Judy Dugan.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Let me actually begin with you, Judy Dugan, if I can. Let's talk first about refineries, because there was a big, disaster, really, I meant to say, up in Washington State of a refinery and refining capacity. We've only had one in the last 30 years. Is this linked to refineries?
You mean
the high cost at the pump, yeah.
Well, yes, it's linked to refineries in the sense of how much oil refineries are willing to process and how much they're willing to keep in this country rather than export it to South America. There's been a decrease in capacity in refineries, and refineries are not even operating near their possible capacity. That raises the price. It also raises the price of our gasoline when gasoline and diesel are exported rather than left in this market. So those are both issues where refineries have some responsibility for the cost of gasoline.
But we keep hearing that most of the responsibility rests with the volatility in the Middle East and with speculators who are buying up futures, actually $11 billion in future contracts for oil just over the last month.
Much of it does lie with speculators in the price of oil. It's not all one thing. It's all of these things. And the speculation is not based on how much oil is available. There's plenty of oil available. Consumption is down pretty much worldwide, certainly in the U.S. and Europe. But speculators love unrest in the Middle East because it helps them drive up the price of oil. In addition, the price of gasoline also has an effect on the price of oil. They're symbiotic. So much of it is purely a speculative bonus, not just for financial firms, but for the oil companies themselves.
Well, you also bring in additional responsibility representing consumers on the shoulders of the oil companies that you feel keep supplying artificially low and exporting at high levels. And you feel it also goes up in election years because of the Republicans?
Not entirely that. What we've seen in past elections is that often the profit of the gap between the price of oil and the price of gasoline, it shrinks a little bit before elections, not exactly cutting the price from one election over another, but providing a lower profit for refiners in the months leading up to election. It's it's something we found that happens, but we can't totally explain why it happens, but it does happen.
And you also, I think, are on record as saying that this is not necessarily even about the crude oil price. It's because Chevron and Exxon, for example, get their own crude oil. It's about profiteering?
Well, there's plenty of profiteering going on, both with the oil companies and with the financial companies that lead in the amount of speculation on the oil and gasoline markets. Oil companies often say, oh, my God, this is completely out of our hands. We're really so sorry about these oil prices. This isn't something we really want. But the truth is that they make record profits out of these high oil prices and more record profits out of high gasoline prices. So there is greed certainly involved in this.
I think, Catherine Rees-Boyd, you'd take exception to that, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would. There is one thing I do agree with Judy on, is that there are many factors that really go into the price of gasoline at the pump or diesel or jet fuel or any of the products that we supply. And as you know, the cost of crude oil probably plays the largest role in the price of gasoline because it's the raw material to which we make the products from. And that is about 80%, two-thirds to three-fourths of the cost of a typical gallon of gasoline, according to the Energy Information Administration, comes from the cost of crude. Now, obviously, the average gas price for regular in California has certainly jumped 5% in the past week, from $3.85 a gallon to about, you know, a little over $4 a gallon. But again, despite that rapid increase, really the indications are fundamental. They link gas prices to crude oil costs. Crude oil increased 5% during that past week, from $100 a barrel to over $105 a barrel, the same 5% that we saw influence the price at the pump. So there is that direct relationship, and that is, as I said, the key factor here in driving what the cost of the pump is. As far as our profiteering, the Energy Information Administration, again, an arm of the Department of Energy, the federal government, over the last 5 years, our average earnings for this industry have been well in line with the rest of the U.S. manufacturing industry. We average 7 cents to every dollar of sales we make, and that's right in line with every other industry in the United States. So I disagree with that comment.
Catherine Rees-Boyd, again, is president of Western States Petroleum Association. What about California? I mean, it's up there just below Alaska and Hawaii in cost right now, and there are tougher refining standards here. There are also isolation from the pipelines. Do you think that the Washington fire affected things, although it even just occurred over the weekend?
Not as much in the state of Washington as other factors that are occurring. Certainly it is influenced in what Washington supplies maybe a slight effect on California. But as you know, most of Washington supplies Washington State and it supplies Oregon. Here in California, there's lots of other factors that are in addition to what I mentioned as the cost of crude oil, those being that we are entering the period where the state requires all the refiners, terminals, and pipelines to convert from a winter blend fuel to a summer blend fuel, and that's due to air pollution regulations, basically, and that's more expensive to make. So you have that conversion going on.
The seasonal shift affects the price, in other words.
Absolutely. And then, of course, as we get into the driving season for the summer, depending on what the economy does, that can also have an effect if driving picks up due to the summer and nicer weather seasons.
But getting back to refineries, a number of refineries are closed early for maintenance, and one would presume that that plays a role, doesn't it?
It is. One of the other things common to refineries is they go offline during certain times of the year for maintenance. And, of course, that's staggered over time, so you don't have all refiners going on for maintenance at the same time. But that's a critical piece to keeping these refineries operating. As you can imagine, they're under a lot of high-temperature pressure situations. The equipment is operating 24/7, 365 to supply the consumer and the businesses the energy they need. And that's not an easy task, and those pieces of equipment have to be maintained because safety is extremely important to the employees and our businesses and our companies and to the surrounding community. So going down for maintenance is a well-planned event, and it's very crucial to the safety and operation of these facilities.
But, you know, I was looking at figures from last year, Catherine Rees-Boyd, and top $4 a gallon twice last year, but now we're 40-50% more than we were last year at this time. Do you know why that is, or can you speculate why that is?
Well, one, I don't speculate, but you know, when you look at crude oil costs and gas prices, they certainly track and they do come down as well. If you look back at 2008, in fact, when oil hit $140 per barrel in July of 2008. In December, it was trading back down at $33 a barrel. So certainly prices and crude follow. They go up and down, and they're very tied, as we know, to the geopolitics of the rest of the world. And certainly, given what's happening in the tensions in the Middle East, it's not surprising that there is such fluctuation in the marketplace.
And what about speculators?
Well, as you know, I mean, there is always the interest of a global commodity. Certainly, people have their opinions about what that means and what that means to demand and supply, as with any commodity. And so, whether you use the term speculation or not, it's a common phenomena in any global product, such as gasoline, diesel, jet fuel, or any other global commodity. Food, for instance, has the same type of reaction.
And let me go to Michael Levy on this, who, again, a senior fellow for energy and environment with the Council on Foreign Relations. How integral to the price of gas is this speculating that's going on with the global commodity, as opposed to just the overall volatility of the Middle East, as you see things, Michael Levy?
Speculation is certainly part of the equation, but it ranks very low on the list right now of influences on price. If you want to explain the price of oil right now, there are two things that stand out above everything else. The first is global economic prospects. When people think that Europe is going to do better and the world will do better, the price of oil goes up. When they worry that the world economy is heading down, the price of oil goes down. So that's the number one factor right now. And adding on top of that is concern about the Middle East, and particularly about tensions with Iran. Speculation is way down that list. It can affect things at the margin and for some period of time. But ultimately, if the price gets too high, people will buy less, but producers will develop more, and oil will build up in inventories, and that tends to correct itself. Right now, we are not seeing this glut of oil on the market. Yes, consumption is down, but so is production, and so we are not seeing an imbalance out there. I also think it's important to flag one other fallacy here, and that's that because we're exporting diesel to other countries, gasoline prices here are higher. Those exports are part of what keep U.S. refineries financially solvent. If you blocked those exports and trapped the fuel here, some of those refineries wouldn't sell it for a lower price to Americans. They would go out of business, and you would have less gasoline supply rather than more.
However, the oil companies are exporting a lot more diesel, aren't they?
Absolutely. And from a U.S. gasoline consumer's perspective, you need to look at that as foreign gasoline sales essentially subsidizing the production of gasoline for domestic markets. Some would go so far as to essentially say gasoline is now a byproduct, and the United States and other gasoline consumers benefit from its greater abundance because diesel sales are propping up the market. It's a complicated market, and it's important to distinguish between gasoline, diesel, oil, and other items. They're not the same thing.
But overall, I think it's axiomatic to say that available crude resources simply can't keep up with the growing worldwide demand.
Well, right now, available crude resources certainly are not keeping up with growing worldwide demand. There are questions as to whether they can. Some will argue that there's a physical shortage of affordable oil. Others, and I tend to be partial to the second explanation, will say that there's still a lot of countries that choose to produce less than they could in order to keep prices higher and in order to increase their profits. There are countries, for example, Saudi Arabia, that have very large shares of the world oil market and have enormous influence over price. And so there's a mix of economics, physical reality, and politics in determining the price of oil.
And what about the point that was made earlier about the refineries being offline this time of year? So presumably supply is down because of that?
I think that's right. You see these cyclical features in the refining market, and sometimes you have several refineries go offline near the same time, and that can influence local markets for gasoline and diesel. So that's certainly part of the equation. That's part of that 20-25% or so of the price that's not the global oil price. That's the that comes through whether you have sufficient refining capacity and how that affects the price of fuels.
But the world economy is so interlocked now that one can presume if the prices continue to go up, they will just continue to go up. Unless we find alternative sources of energy or stop being so reliant upon fossil fuels.
In the long term, we certainly need to be making a shift not only to alternative sources of energy, but frankly to greater efficiency in our use of energy. And that's the biggest place where we've made advances in recent years, is in improving the efficiency of U.S. use of gasoline. That helps us both by reducing demand, so it puts a curb on price. But it also means that because we're using less of it, even if the price does go up, it doesn't affect us as much. Now, that takes a long time to make that transformation, but it's a very important transformation to be executing.
Michael Levy again with us from Washington, Senior Fellow for Energy and the Environment with the Council on Foreign Relations. And let's bring Jay McKeeman into this, who's Vice President of Government Relations for the California Independent Oil Marketers Association. They represent gas station owners. And maybe we can begin, Jay, by getting your wisdom about why we find such differences in gas station costs. AAA tracks this, and just here in California, for example, you got gas stations at $3.73 a gallon in Salinas, and up in Eureka at $4.05. Why that fluctuation so great?
Well, there's a lot of factors that go into the posted price at a service station. Wholesale price is the key factor, and then typically in areas with higher posted price, you're going to have higher wholesale price. That's just, you know, it's like the price of crude follows the gas, the price of gasoline follows the price of crude. The posted price at the pump follows the wholesale price of gasoline. And again, there can be a lot of variables in terms of how that wholesale price varies depending on transportation, logistics, and local supply variables, et cetera. So, I mean, it's just anybody that's driven around the state knows that there's a lot of variance in the
The state. You go to Casper, Wyoming, it's $2.86 a gallon.
That's because Wyoming certainly doesn't have the environmental burdens that the California fuels have.
Well, from your perspective, though, what's spiking here? What's behind it as you see it?
Well, I tend to disagree with the other speakers this morning in terms of the influence of the speculative markets on the price of fuels. Our national association, the Petroleum Marketers Association of America, was deeply involved in the financial reform activities back in Washington, D.C. And through that process of being involved in that, we learned a lot about how speculation has changed the pricing dynamic of crude oil and basically everything below it, in the terms that there is a lot of paper traded that is not based upon actual gallons of fuel. So that tends to distort the pricing of the fuel based upon how much paper is flowing, not how many real gallons are flowing or being hedged. So that's we think it's a huge impact. I believe the chairman of Exxon a couple of years ago, you know, at that time I think crude was about 110, and he said, you know, the based upon supply and demand, the price of crude should be about 60. So, you know, there's certainly a huge component in the speculation, and that's what it is people saying, well, we think things are going bad in Greece, or we think things are turning south in the Mideast, and frankly, I can't remember a time in recent history that things weren't going bad in the Middle East, and so I don't know how much to attribute you know, bad conditions in the Middle East to the price of crude. They're just continually bad there.
Well, but there's the specter of the possibility of Israel going after Iran and the Strait of Hormuz being closed, Libya shutting down. I mean, there's been a lot more volatility.
I would tend to disagree with that. There's always a reason in the Middle East that there's going to be some major impact to fuel supply. So I just think that's a constant. But in the speculative market, those things, those small differences take on a magnified amplitude. So that's you know, I think that's a huge problem in California. Certainly, you know, 25 to 50 cents a gallon, day in and day out, is added to the fuel price here because of the significant environmental burdens that are put on to the price of fuel. Reformulated fuels, significant requirements at gas stations in terms of vapor recovery and underground storage tank requirements, and it all just adds up to a much higher day-in, day-out price here in the state. And frankly, I don't see a lot of problems or issues with the refining capacity in this state. It appears that there are safe margins there based upon historical data in terms of fuel supplies or bunkers. And, you know, I just don't see a real significant difference in today's information over past. So, you know, that again leads us to conclude that the speculative interest in crude oil and in fuel commodities is creating a much bigger piece of the picture than the others have been.
Judy Dugan, you want to respond to that? Because you were certainly talking about the importance of refineries as well as profiteering.
I would agree with Mr. McKinnon, and in fact, we're part of the same group that his group is in terms of trying to get better control over speculation. In terms of speculation, to expand on that, the amount of market trading that goes on in the hands of speculators has grown exponentially over the last decade or so. And now the market, the majority of the trades on the market are speculative. They have nothing to do with the idea of people who buy gasoline or buy oil or sell oil hedging their own bets to try to make a stable market. In fact, the speculation is causing an unstable market, not encouraging a stable market for producers and buyers.
And Judy, I'm sorry, please finish your thought. I was just going to identify who you are.
And then just the idea of what he said about refiners. Yes, there is capacity, and refineries in California are not running at full capacity, and the fact that they are exporting does raise the price of our gasoline. I mean, no matter how you want to frame it, it raises the price of our gasoline. And it could be lower if there were fewer exports, because gasoline is also being exported in record quantities from this country.
And again, Judy Dugan is Research Director of Consumer Watch. So we're coming up on a break, and I want to just get a response from you, Catherine Rehise-Boyd, particularly in light of the fact that people are driving less. There's more fuel-efficient cars that are out there. The domestic oil production is at an 8-year high, and the demand for petroleum in the U.S. is at the lowest level since 1997.
Well, I mean, I did want to comment on one point of the speculation. I mean, we certainly saw the, this is reminiscent, obviously, of what occurred last year when there was political turmoil up in Egypt and elsewhere in the oil-bearing nations, and certainly there was an impact on crude prices. And so that, you know, the so-called Arab Spring, as everyone called it, plus the earthquake and Europe's debt woes, I mean, certainly all of that contributed to the cost of crude and therefore impacts on the retail marketplace. So I appreciate Jay's comments and Judy's comments in regard to that. So I would agree there obviously is some relationship there.
Not again, Catherine Rehise-Boyd is president of Western States Petroleum Association. She's with us from Sacramento. You can be with us as well. In fact, I'd like to have you weigh in on this and invite you to call us. You can not only make some comments here about the price of gasoline is going up at the pump, but you may want to have questions for any of our guests. Our toll-free number is available to you, 866-733-6786, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Gas prices across the country are shooting up, and in Bay Area cities, prices have actually passed the $4 mark and may keep climbing as investors watch escalating tensions between Iran and Israel in the Middle East. At the same time, there's optimism that the global economy may be improving, driving oil demand up. You can join us to discuss all the factors and what the high prices mean for the economy and your wallet. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, click on the segment and post your comments there, or go to our Facebook page. With us, Jay McKeeman, who is Vice President of Government Relations with the California Independent Oil Marketers Association. They represent gas station owners. Michael Levy, who is the Senior Fellow for Energy and the Environment with the Council on Foreign Relations, and Catherine Rehise-Boyd, President of the Western States Petroleum Association, and Judy Dugan, who is Research Director of the Consumer Watchdog. I want to go to your calls and emails. First, just let me get a couple of comments from Michael Levy and Jay McKeeman. And Michael Levy, talk about just the sense of, well, there's a lot of optimism, as I indicated, about the global economy maybe improving and about the U.S. economy maybe improving. There's always been a connection between that, presumably, and gasoline price.
Right. And I think Jay made an important point, too. We've always had fluctuations in the global economy. We've always had unrest in the Middle East. What's different this time? And there is something big that's different this time. From the mid to late 1970s until the middle of the last decade, several countries in the Middle East kept a lot of oil off the market but ready to move on to the market on short notice. We called that spare capacity. So if the global economy picked up and there wasn't enough oil, they could quickly put more oil on the market. If there was a supply disruption, they could quickly intervene. But toward the middle of the last decade, that spare capacity largely evaporated. And at this point, there simply is not enough of that quick response oil out there in the market to buffer these disruptions. So whether it is new optimism in the economy or tensions in the Middle East, we end up relying on big fluctuations in price to balance the market rather than this far more benign intervention from some strategically placed oil-producing countries. And that makes for a much rockier economic time.
And Jay McKeeman, let me go back to you for a moment here, and then we'll bring our callers into this. Demand is falling with presumably all this increased efficiency that we're reading about and the reliance on other fuels, is it not?
Absolutely. It's, I think many writers that I've seen recently have basically said, at least in the United States, we've hit peak consumption, and now we will see continuing decline. And certainly we're seeing that in California as well. So it's a combination of price driving down demand and higher fuel efficiency. So that's, certainly from the service station owner's perspective, that's the new reality that that consumption isn't going to continually increase forever. It's going down, and businesses are going to have to adjust accordingly.
There's a listener who writes, it's too bad you feel necessary to offer fair and balanced reporting when it comes to gas prices. The real question you should be asking is who initiates the price increase? Is it is either one person, even one person on a committee, or is it from an algorithm placed in a computer, but an algorithm that was written by a human being? Who is the person in Exxon or Chevron or Shell that says, go up 3 cents tomorrow or 15 cents next week? The problem with today's reporting, and you and the New York Times are guilty of this, is no one ever names people anymore. So you ask your guests, who do we, the great unwashed public, write to or phone to complain about recent price increases? I think we're going to have to go to you on this, Catherine Rehise-Boyd.
Well, it isn't, as we've just discussed through all of the speakers here, it is not one person, two people, three people, and certainly it isn't the oil companies. As we've talked about, the price of crude is 80% of what finds its way to the cost at the pump. So, and that's a global commodity, and we've given many reasons in the last half hour as to what causes that. I know that it would be helpful for people to have someone to point to that makes this all an easy conversation, but it is a complicated one, and as we've said, there's many factors, and you can't just look at one single factor because obviously people are upset about the rising gas prices and what that means to them. So I certainly understand that, but it isn't an easy point the finger at one person and it's this person's fault for what we see happening.
Judy Dugan, do you point fingers?
Yeah, I point fingers certainly at refiners in terms of sending out the gasoline from the refinery to the stations. The oil companies have, especially the ones on branded stations, they have different pricing for different gas stations. You know, if you're in a high-income, high-traffic area, you're going to find gasoline that's going to cost 10 cents, 15 cents more a gallon than somewhere else. These prices are not but certainly in their entirety determined by the station owners. They're determined by the refiners and the wholesalers who sell the gasoline to the stations. And you can find stations within blocks of others with radically different pricing. It's called zone pricing. So that's one thing that people should be fairly furious about.
All right, let's find out what the people have to say or ask, and we'll begin, Alfred, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, and you just commented on my comment, which is I work in the Bay Area and live in the Central Valley, and I notice that when I'm driving home every weekend, that as soon as I get to, like, Stockton, gas is a nickel cheaper, and when I get to Fresno, it's 10 cents cheaper than it is in the Bay Area. This is despite the fact that the refineries are located in Martinez and Bakersfield. It obviously costs money to transport the stuff, so when you see gas that's cheaper 90 miles away from the refinery than it is right next door to the refinery, you know there's price manipulation going on here, and there needs to be a congressional investigation, because obviously, I mean, there's gas station operators and the refiners are engaging in price gouging.
Well, Jay McKeeman, you want to respond to that, since he mentions the operators here as well?
Well, yeah, certainly. You know, I mean, a lot of studies have been done, numerous, too many to mention, on, you know, whether there is gouging or ill-gained profits from petroleum sales, and all of them have found that there's just an active and vibrant marketplace, and there are a lot of factors that go into pricing. Certainly the cost of living in the Bay Area is higher in the Bay Area than it is in Fresno, and you know, fuel prices reflect that. I mean, it's kind of instrumental or educational to understand how the retailer prices their product. First of all, they price their product not on the load they just got, but on the load that they're going to get. It's replacement value. That's how they have to do their business, based upon, you know, what's the next load going to cost. And right in times like this, it's very hard to judge. So there's certainly going to be some variation in price based upon, you know, individual judgment. But more importantly, they go around to the stations in their market area and they compare prices and they see what everybody else is selling for, and then they make an educated guess about how they can keep consumption going at their station by pricing a penny lower or a penny higher. So that's what happens in the petroleum market, in the sense that prices are constantly compared. And pricing is evaluated based upon how you're going to compete with others in the marketplace in terms of that commodity. And certainly fuel is it's an interesting thing. Fuel is the one commodity that you can shop from the seat of your car, because there's basically 3-foot letter or numbers establishing the price. That's the only commodity that you can, you know, drive around and understand what the pricing difference is.
Well, I want to get to more of our callers, but sure. Just for a moment, I want to go to you again, Catherine Reyes-Boyd, because I believe you've said that it's the consumer that sets the prices, not the retailer. What do you mean by that?
No, I don't think I did say the consumer, but I do want to comment on Jay's point, and I think, you know, especially in the San Francisco region, as we all know, land is of a high value, and so it's difficult also to find as much competition there as perhaps in some of the other regions noted, because it's just difficult to locate a gas station. I mean, I think anyone who's driven in the Bay Area would find it difficult to even find one. So there's certainly differences in competition if you have 4 stations on a corner. You know, the competition is obviously a lot higher than if you only have one in an entire downtown area. So competition always is a factor and should be. I mean, that's just part of the equation. So,
all right, we bring more callers on. And Ryan, thank you for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Morning, Michael. I just kind of wanted to put it out there. You know, there seems to be a lot of anger and frustration toward these refiners and toward the oil companies. And, you know, it's not exactly our God-given right to have cheap gasoline available 24/7. Why is it completely out of the question for a company to make some money and turn a profit at the end of the day?
Well, interesting point, and I thank you for it. And one might say, Michael Levy, that it costs a lot more for gas in Europe and many other parts of the world than it does here.
Well, it's important to distinguish. It costs a lot more in Europe because governments put high taxes on gasoline consumption. That allows them to fund the services that people want. I don't know that we need as high gas taxes as in Europe, but certainly we are underusing that tool as an aspect of policy. I think the caller also makes an important point. If you were to tell gas stations that they had to charge substantially less, they would just go out of business. They wouldn't provide the fuel for less. They would go out of business. Now, if there are distortions in the market that we can help correct so that prices come down in an economically sensible way, that's a good thing. You had a caller who said, who do I call about these high prices? I would say you can't do much in the near term, but your caller should call their member of Congress and advocate for stronger efforts on fuel efficiency and steps like that so that over the longer term we don't see as high prices. There are steps you can take, but they just don't change things tomorrow.
Well, apropos of that, here's a comment on the web from Mike who says, I'd love to hear comment on the broader long-term context of sustainability, peak oil, gas tax for green alternatives, Manhattan Project for clean energy, etc. My opinion is that it's sad how many people forget that gas prices were near $5 in 2008, and we didn't take a harder look then at long-term solutions. How much money would we save by not having oil wars, for example? We'll go to more of your calls, and we'll go to Corte Madera. Jane, hi, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I have to say, I regard myself as a pretty intelligent person, and I've listened to this program from the very beginning. And frankly, I don't understand much of what you're saying. It's too complicated for me. I would like a description of oil from out of the ground into my tank. The idea that we drill for oil in this country, and then we sell it, and then we import it from someplace else. I just don't understand this. And now all the oil companies, they want leases. They're talking about drilling off the coast of California. They want to go back. Oil leases have been given in the Gulf of Mexico. To me, it is nothing more than greed on the part of the oil companies and profits and lower taxes for them. And the American people are really being damaged. I've seen people on the news talk about the amount of these SUVs. They put one man said he just paid $80 for a tank of gasoline. This is absolutely insane. The gas stations immediately off the freeways charge the highest, I heard on your program the other day. We import 80% of our garlic from China because the farmers I forget the name of the city, can't afford to grow garlic anymore. This country.
You don't mean Gilroy, do you?
Gilroy. Yeah. And I heard somebody say yesterday he went to the last Gilroy Festival, bought some garlic, it said imported from China. You know, apples come from China also. We import more apples than we grow in our own country. This country has a big fat problem, and I attribute it a lot to this business with gasoline, and we are getting screwed, and I'm really angry about this. What can we do? What could the president do? Can he do anything? And if he can, how do we get him to do it? It's just insane. The whole thing is insane. If you drive down to Los Angeles and those oil wells are still pumping, I don't know whether Beverly Hills High oil pump is still pumping oil out of that place. Where does that oil go? Does it? And this business with refineries, I don't understand.
Well, Jane, you've certainly raised a lot of issues and raised them with a good deal of heat and passion. And maybe let's go back to the question that Jane raises about where does the consumer go, Judy Dugan, and how can change be brought about or brought into some kind of fruition?
Well, there are a couple of things that could happen. One is that the government needs to move a lot faster on putting over controls on the speculators in the oil markets and in the commodity markets in general. Because what's happened is we've seen big companies like Goldman Sachs put commodities like corn, agricultural commodities, in a big bundle with energy commodities and sell these things to investors. And what happens is that then we get corn going up at the same rate as oil. And this is hard on the food industry. It's hard on consumers. We've got a whole economy that's going to be right on the edge of sinking back into recession if energy prices stay as high as they are. The government has not moved as fast as it ought to because of heavy lobbying by financial industries and the oil industry in Washington trying to stop the curbs that Congress intended to put on speculation in oil. And as far as refineries, there really is no reason that something so essential as fuel shouldn't be regulated like a public utility. I mean, I know that the oil industry hates this idea, but public utilities make stable profits, and they have relatively stable prices. And if refineries were regulated by the states in the same manner as electric utilities, we would see more stability in pricing.
Judy Dugan, again with us from Santa Monica, is Research Director of Consumer Watchdog. And with us from San Francisco is Roger. You're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. We own and operate two independent gas stations, one in Daly City and one in Redwood City. And I just wanted to confirm what one of your guests was saying about pricing in terms of the way we try to price. And it's literally just as simple as that. I mean, we drive around, look at our competitors' street prices, and we try to be as competitive as we can and yet still make, you know, a reasonable margin on our gas. It, just as one, you know, final point I just wanted to make is, for example, as an independent, I buy fuel on something called the spot market. So I, you know, I'm not insulated as, say, a major oil brand would be a Valero or a Chevron operator. So, for example, over the last 2 days, my wholesale price jumped literally 34 cents in one day. So it's very difficult for me sometimes to predict that. And also, sometimes I need to actually lose money for a short period of time to stay competitive with a major down the street. I can't price higher than the Chevron, and sometimes they move up or down much slower than I have.
Roger, I need to ask, because I'm looking at a number of emails that have come in, what you would say to a listener named Adam who writes, pump price related to wholesale price, what a crock. In Santa Rosa or Marin, you can find a 25 to 30 cent gallon differential within a matter of blocks.
What I would say to that is, well, you know, I'm not sophisticated enough to answer that question. I'm only looking at it from my very small lens of a two gas station operator. All I can say is, under oath here on the air, that I just price based on what my competitors down the street are pricing and based on what my wholesaler tells me that I'm going to be paying. I get a fax every day, literally every day about 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, and it tells me what I'm going to pay. And there's nothing I can do about that. I can only buy 8,700 gallons at a time. I can't, you know, buy like major oil companies. They buy on the futures market. They trade. They, you know, they're more plugged into different ways to insulate their dealers from pricing. I literally 30 cent jump in a day to me, and I can't even reflect that on my street price because I have a Chevron and a Shell down the street that are probably not going to have to respond to that the same way I'm going to have to respond to that.
Well, I thank you for your comments. I could point out, though, and probably should, that there are lots of ways to find the cheapest gas prices near where you live. You just go online and type cheap gas prices into your search engine. But here's a listener named Ariel who writes, high fuel prices are a good thing because they lower consumption of fossil fuels. It's selfish and short-sighted to advocate for cheap gas in this era of climate change. We'll get another caller on here. Chris, that's you. Good morning.
In one sense, gasoline prices are way too low. We used to pave state highways with a gas tax, federal highways with a gas tax. The federal trust fund is now empty. With the states, we're now paying for highways with sales taxes. Alameda has a half-cent sales tax. They're about to go up to a cent. So many things that used to be paid for by fuel are now paid for by the general fund. And on top of that, you know, we've recently had at least one of the two wars that was entirely about gasoline, and none of it was paid for by a gas tax.
Well, Chris, we'll let that stand as an editorial comment, and thank you for it. I want to go to more calls. I also want to go to some of your emails. John in Antioch writes, and Michael Levy, let me go to you on this. He says, thanks for the great show. Thank you. I want to know, why don't they start building more refineries? For instance, instead of trying to build a pipeline across the U.S. from Canada to Texas, why not just build a refinery in the U.S. right on the Canada border and make the gasoline there and then ship it out from there?
Refineries are really expensive to build, and they're not a fantastic business to be in. If you want to know why people aren't building them, it's because they can't make money off them. When it is cheaper to build a pipeline from Canada to Texas than to build new refineries, you're going to see people build a pipeline rather than build new refineries. And it's important to remember, this is a competitive market. When one of the other guests asked, why don't we just regulate refineries like public utilities? Well, the power station that provides my electricity is not going to move to another country and then sell me that power. The refinery, if I regulate it too tightly, will move to another country, and then I will be buying that gasoline.
I think, Catherine Rehaus-Boyd, was it you who said that retail prices directly correlate with crude?
Yeah, and I think that the two comments I'd like to make just listening to the last several callers is, and one to the woman who's expressing extreme frustration to try to understand this very complicated subject. I certainly appreciate and understand that. So I want to just share a couple things. Certainly in California and certainly in the U.S., we are still importing over 50% of what we need, and that's the case in both as an individual state and as a nation. So we do, you know, especially in California, there are no product lines that bring gasoline, diesel, or any other product into this state. So we are an energy island in a sense. And so we either make it here or we import it in by tanker. That's the only two choices California has. And so put on top of that, the California gasoline is more costly than any other place in the U.S. because of the higher taxes. I mean, we have the highest taxes in the nation. It's higher cost to produce because California demands a unique and clean burning formula for gasoline. Not a bad thing, but it's more costly to produce. So there are certainly other factors for causing this impact in California. But one of the points was that, you know, we have enough oil, we're producing enough, and that certainly is not the case. And some of those are through the policies of the people who live in California.
There's well, we had a listener who asked why gas is a third cheaper in Mexico. Can you comment on that?
No, but I can comment on the oil companies. You know, they, as we all know, really own a very small portion of the world's crude oil reserves. That's according to the American Petroleum Institute and the Department of Energy. Companies like ExxonMobil, Shell Oil, Chevron, they own 6% of the world's supply of oil. So the national oil companies like Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Iran, Libya, so on and so forth, own, you know, more than 80% of the world's supply of oil. So I think Michael Levy made a very good point as to, you know, how does that influence also the ability of this excess supply or lack thereof.
But if Chevron and Exxon get their own crude oil, I'm going back to a listener named Rick who writes an email to us saying, a month ago crude was 20% lower in the $80 range, yet gas at the pump never dropped below $3.49. So it would appear that pump prices go up when crude rises but don't go down when it falls.
No, and that's really not correct. In fact, there's many data, and we can point you to it, and you can go to the Department of Energy website, that the rise and fall of crude oil and retail prices track very closely, and they have an over trends of 20 years.
We'll bring more callers on, and Michael, you're next. Welcome to Forum.
Thank you for having me on. One quick comment. I drive a Prius. And, you know, whether it's $3 a gallon or $5 a gallon, virtually makes no impact on my life. So that's one way to for consumers to address issues is buy a car that gets good fuel economy. The question I have is, there was a professor from UC Berkeley a couple years back had mentioned, why not peg the gasoline tax to the price of oil so that you can stabilize the price of oil, because stability is a key factor from an economic perspective and business perspective. So I would like you know, some commentary on, you know, could we have a base gas tax with a floating pricing or tax that helps stabilize the price of tax?
What would you think about that, Jay McKeeman?
Well, unfortunately, if you've just identified two objecting principles. If we have a floating tax, it's not going to be stable. Right now we do have a stable and predictable tax base. So if you float it based upon various criteria, you're going to have an unstable tax. And the real problem is, if you base the tax on the price of crude, you're basically indexing the tax to conditions outside of your control, global conditions. So it would be you really start seeing some interesting changes at the price pump, at the pump, if you had a floating fuel tax, and it would make it extremely much more difficult for the retailer to try to price their fuel accurately and still maintain a profit.
Well, we've got a little time left here, and Michael Levy, let me get some prognosticating from you as we wrap up here. Where do you think this is going to head?
Well, if I can make one prediction confidently, it's that you'll see higher gas prices in the year ahead and lower gas prices in the year ahead. We live in a very volatile market, and it is very difficult to predict where things are going. But I think it's also important, A, for people to keep things in perspective. I can walk down my street and find orange juice priced at six different levels, and I don't come to the conclusion that orange juice sellers are colluding to take my money away and to manipulate the market. So there's always going to be some variation out there. But the flip side is we need to think about the long game. You're not going to solve these challenges overnight, but there are long-term things that we can do to reduce consumption and also to facilitate increased production, even if that has a smaller ultimate impact, so that we lessen some of these challenges in the future.
Well, that will conclude it. I want to thank you, Michael Levy, Senior Fellow for Energy and the Environment with the Council on Foreign Relations. Thank our other guests as well. Judy Dugan from Consumer Watchdog. She's Research Director there. Catherine Rehise-Boyd, who is President of the Western States Petroleum Association. And Jay McKeeman, who is Vice President of Government Relations with the California Independent Oil Marketers Association. Thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We're here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. You can continue this discussion on our Facebook page or by going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and to our producers, Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Ferro, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.